Hey there, podcast family. T-Bone here to talk about the 3D Dentist Digital Implant Continuum. Are you ready to start placing dental implants, but feeling a bit hesitant and or overwhelmed? I know that feeling. I've been there. Let's change that together. Imagine not just learning about dental implants in a classroom, but actually performing surgeries on real patients right here in North Carolina, guided every step of the way by our expert 3D mentors. This is dental implant learning at its best, using techniques that are safe, predictable, and confidence-boosting. They're exactly what I use in my own practice, so you know they work. Our course goes beyond clinical skills. We prepare you to successfully integrate high-demand implant services into your practice, transforming your career by attracting new patients and elevating your practice. And it doesn't end with the course. Completing our program is just the beginning of a new journey. You'll be a part of a community of confident, skilled dentists with ongoing support to ensure lasting success and growth. After all, this is about mastering a skill that can transform your career, just like it did for me. So, are you ready to take your practice to the next level? Visit www.3d-dentist.com, check out our upcoming sessions, and join us to revolutionize your practice. 3D Dentist is truly committed to helping dentists take control of their practice, finances, and future. Now let's get back to this week's episode.
Welcome to T-Bone Speaks with Dr. Tarun Agarwal, where our goal is to change the way you practice dentistry by helping you achieve clinical, financial, and personal balance. Now, here's your host, T-Bone.
All right, everybody. We are back, and I have an unexpected visitor today. Dr. Justin Moody is sitting in my practice lobby. We don't have a waiting area, even though sometimes patients wait. But, you know, that chandelier is my wife's. I mean, otherwise, if this were my office, it would be black couches, black leather couches with recliners everywhere. But, you know, since I don't have a say in that, it's not my design.
Well, I see you share this lobby area with...
With my wife's practice, yes. Yeah. She has her own lobby, but, you know, we put...
A lobby within a lobby.
Yeah, in a way, because at the end of the day, that office is technically accessible from the side entrance, but we shut it off. So that way people had to walk through our practice, our lobby, to get to her office.
Right.
So, the foot traffic, and it helps. I mean, everything helps.
Well, I think your lobby's very nice.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah. Justin, what do you... And the chandelier.
It's nice. I think we may have bought that on Amazon. I think
this isn't a family heirloom or anything like that.
No. I'm pretty sure actually we bought it on Amazon, and it cost us more to have somebody put it together than it cost, because I don't do physical labor whatsoever. In fact, we gave away our some chairs at the house the last couple of weeks ago. My friend wanted me to help him pick it up. I gave them to him, right?
Right.
And he wanted me to help him pick them up and put them in the car. I said, listen, dude, I'll hire somebody. I'm not picking up anything. But there's a, listen, part of it's because I'm lazy, but part of it's also from an experience. My brother's an oral surgeon. He's 8 years younger than me. So he's like 33 years old. Okay. And last winter, he was helping somebody that got their car stuck in the snow. He was helping them push their car out of the snow, and he tweaked his back. And he ended up having back surgery, and he has lost some muscle and nerve memory or permanent damage in his left leg, I think it is. I can't do it anymore because, my livelihood, if that were my arm, imagine if that were your right arm.
Right.
That happened to.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said about that. I used to like to ski, back when I was a little thinner and such. But, for me today.
Now we just roll down.
I know. I'd rather. can I just get pushed down the hill? You think about, the commitment it takes, the number of people that you employ and such. Yeah. And, for you to go down with a broken wrist from skiing on your right hand, that's.
Because, Justin, today I'm no longer burdened with school debt. I'm burdened with business debt. And life is so much easier now that I don't have school debt and just have business debt that I have to take care of.
Yes.
So, Justin, what are you doing in Raleigh, North Carolina? And let me ask you this also. Why in the world did you not pay homage to me and let me know you were coming, that I had to find out on Facebook that you're here and make sure that you come to visit me?
Truthfully, the answer to that lies is it's Sunday. Yeah. You know, I didn't land here until almost 3 on Sunday, and Sunday's kind of a family deal, and I knew that you had Aaron Elliott, and you did a course, and you were tired, and, you know.
I'm never tired, man. I'm only tired from 8 o'clock at night till 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, I hear you. But part of that was just like, I don't want to intrude on a guy's weekend after a big weekend.
Just so you know, next time it's never intrusive. I need somebody to come into my house and help me take care of my kids for me, to be quite honest with you, okay? So somebody's got to be dad to my kids.
there's no such thing as free rent, you know? Yeah.
Somebody's got to come over and play basketball and sword fight with my little guy, okay? So from now on, when you come to town, you'll have to stay with me.
Well, I'd be honored.
Yeah, we'd love to have you. And
I'd be honored.
But in all seriousness, what are you doing here in Raleigh, North Carolina?
I do some consulting and some implant training for a large group practice, what they call a DSO.
Okay.
It's affordable dentures and implants. They're based here in Raleigh.
Yeah, they're based here in Raleigh. You know, I didn't know that until 2 years ago.
Well, I think they used to be actually up in Kinston. You know,
yeah.
But so, then now everybody kind of lives here.
If they wanted to attract good people, they had to move to Raleigh.
I don't know the demographics of North Carolina, so I'm going to stay quiet on
that. Yeah, as you should.
I've been helping them train their doctors and implants for about 2.5 years, and really good company ran by, you know, really extraordinary people that, you know, it's not, I mean, it's corporate dentistry, but yet they've been doing it for 40 years and their doctors have, you kind of look at it this way, you know, you can kind of judge a guy's practice by, you know, are they always turning over their assistants and stuff, or do they have assistants that have been with them for a long time? You know, this having over 200 offices in 40 states, their turnover doctors is very, very little.
Yeah,
and that should tell you a little bit that they're run pretty darn well.
I think, you know, they get lumped in with all the DSOs, and look, yep. I don't look at DSOs as a positives or negative, okay? But they're different, and what I say they're different as is they serve a very unique segment of the market, and they pretty much don't deviate from that. And there's, for the most part, they're serving a segment of the market that most dentists are not serving.
You're exactly right. And I think that if you were to think about it, many people get, you know, many general dentists in private practice are somewhat fearful. Really, what they're fearful is the unknown of the DSO. They don't really know what they do. But an affordable dentures moving in across the street from you is not going to take one single patient from your practice.
Not unless you're doing dentures all day long.
Correct. I mean, they serve a different demographic and a different need within the community. And oftentimes, you may offer those procedures, but at a fee that would never work for the people that go to affordable dentures.
Yeah.
So, you know, they are serving a certain segment of the population is getting served by this group that is doing a phenomenal job for them.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they wouldn't get the. They wouldn't.
Otherwise,
be able to
get people they'd be gumming it
for sure.
Or they'd be keeping infected teeth. Because listen, I talk about this in every lecture I do, and we got to talk about the difference in lecturing and training a little bit. Okay, we were talking about that.
Yeah.
But every speaking event I do, towards the end, I talk about us serving our community, and we do a free day of dentistry here where we take out teeth for people. And I think one of the things that our profession is losing sight of is that if a average, typical, everyday worker of this country needed a tooth taken out, they'd have to work almost half to a full week to afford the tooth being taken out. Because in my office, if you walk in, and I'm no fancy office, but it's $160, $170 to take the tooth out, plus the exam, plus the x-ray, all in, you're $250. You know, and the average person makes $10 an hour. $10, $12 an hour in this country, that person has to work 20 to 30 hours. I mean, imagine having to work 20 to 30 hours to afford to take a tooth out.
Right.
And, you know,
if
we
you have to take one tooth out. Do you think that's the only one you need taken out?
Probably not. You know, and so we should, you know, my message is to people is to just open up your office once or twice a year and do goodwill dentistry. And not fancy dentistry, just take people's teeth out because there's so many people that need their teeth taken out.
I think you hit something that I think is very important, and that is, you know, that give back and opening your practice up. You know, I see a lot of people that open it up and they give away a big cosmetic case or whatever it is. But you know, I don't think I don't think that is a value to the community, because you're talking about, we're talking about somebody that is in pain and might not be able to do their job, or, you know, what if that patient misses one or two days of their $10 an hour job because their tooth hurts? Yeah. Like that's a devastating.
That's why BC powder exists.
Yeah.
But no, but in all seriousness, and listen, maybe this is the cynic in me. Because I've done these things, I've done these the shelter cases, these cosmetic cases. I've always, I'm being totally honest. Part of me always did those things because I wanted the exposure,
right? Somewhat self-serving,
yeah, of course. For but sure. What I do, I don't want the exposure of I'm taking out free teeth. You know, I don't want. I tell the TV crews, please don't show up,
right?
Because I don't want that, right? You know, my goal is to literally just help people. And I think there's the selfish side of me is, if you're going to have a tooth taken out by me, you want to come the week after my free weekend, because I am awesome at taking out teeth for that week. When you take out 150 in one day, that next week you are master tooth extractor.
That is true. That is true. But it's important that we give back. And I think it's important that we realize that there's a segment of our population that cannot afford our services, but a lot of times it's detrimental to their health.
You know, it's like the people that bitch and moan about dental insurance, like it's a bad thing. And I don't think our industry would be half, or if not more, of what it is without dental insurance.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, podcast family. T-Bone here. Are you a dentist looking to elevate your practice and profits? Then pay close attention. Introducing the 3D Business Mastermind, the dental business coaching program designed for dentists who want to see real results. I've walked the path of practice ownership for nearly 25 years. I know your challenges. I felt your pain. This is your opportunity to overcome the chaos, the busyness, and the financial frustrations of owning a dental practice. Imagine a dental practice where your appointment book is highly productive, doing the dentistry you enjoy, your team is self-motivated, and your profits keep climbing. That's what the 3D Business Mastermind is all about. In this exclusive mastermind, you'll join a league of ambitious dentists driven to elevate their practices. You'll gain access to proven strategies, personalized coaching, and a community that understands your journey. So if you're ready to supercharge your dental practice and enjoy the success you deserve, visit www.3d-dentists.com and take the first step towards a brighter future in dentistry by filling out the 3D Business Mastermind application. Now, let's get to this week's episode.
Well, think about this. You know, is dental insurance really bad for the patient when you have an employer that is paying for it or a good portion of it, and the benefit that you could get it from could get at the end of the year is far more than what you paid into? Like, that's a good thing for the patient, right?
Of course, yeah.
It is a good thing. So it's not, you know, dental insurance as a whole is not bad. You know, some of these companies choose to spend their money on skyboxes and advertisements.
Sure, that's okay.
but it's okay. I mean, it is what it is. But I don't, you know, when you see some of those threads on Dental Town or Facebook, you look at it and they're like, you know, death to the insurance companies.
Dude, our industry would die. I'm being honest with you.
Oh, for sure.
Because number one, but see, people don't understand, our industry runs, you know, what we do as dentists drives so much. It drives the companies around us, the innovations they create, the products they create. And if my practice were cut in half, I wouldn't buy hardly anything. But I wouldn't buy it. I mean, I'd still be doing just, you know, like basic amalgams or something, right? You know, I don't know what I would be doing if my practice got cut in half. So for us to have innovation, to do some of the fancy, fun things that we do, to do the dental implants. How many dental implants wouldn't be done if patients didn't get some level of reimbursement towards that, you know? And it's amazing.
So, and the majority of my practice is one tooth at a time, you know, even though I do full arch and stuff. The majority of what I do is replace existing edentulous areas, but most of it is, you know, failing endo, failing, you know, non-structurally sound teeth, that it's the best thing to take it out and put an implant in. And it's really one tooth at a time. And dental insurance helps them out a ton.
Yeah.
It helps them
course.
Out a ton. Because
if they can pay $1,000 is a lot.
For sure it is.
I don't have $1,000. For anybody listening to this podcast right now, what percentage of them you think has $1,000 in their pocket right now?
Ooh, single digit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
It'd be crazy, right?
Yeah.
Like, so $1,000 is a lot of money.
Yeah, I don't care who you are.
No, it doesn't matter.
Right.
Yeah, it's a lot of money. So, you know, I think we need to sometimes take a step back and look at the positives of things, not just the negatives of things. That's odd coming from me, but... But all right, Justin, I want to talk to you about a couple of things. Okay. One is you are known as an implant expert. Okay. Sure. Or all right, okay. I know you don't like that title. Okay. You are known as a person who has made their living teaching and doing a lot of implant dentistry.
Fair.
Okay. But what's unique about you is that you've done it in small towns.
I have.
Okay. So, one of the things I often hear, you know, when people come here and learn from me is, well, you can do this here. And I'm like, dude, there's 50 dentists within a 2 mile radius of me. What are you talking about? You can do it. I can do it here. You know, well, you don't understand a small town America. I'm like, I mean, what do you mean small? It's in my opinion, it's easier in small town America. So describe your practice, your story in terms of, you know, being the number of implants you do. You know, I know you don't like to talk an exact number, but right. But we got to give some level of, you know, we got to give something for people to understand the gravity of it.
You know, when I got out of dental school, I went back to my hometown of Crawford, Nebraska, population 1,107 people, you know, and that's not a lot of people, you know.
No, I think that's my street corner here.
For sure, you know. Oh, there's more dentists. There's probably that many dentists in this, in Raleigh-Durham, you know. So, you know, I went back there and it was readily apparent after the first couple months that, like, this profession is not for me doing dentures that float around and doing adjustments and stuff. So I already knew, you know, that I wanted to do surgery, and I already knew that I wanted to get into dental implants. So I just blazed that trail. I took every CE that I could possibly get my hands on, you know.
What year did you graduate dental school?
97.
Okay.
So
it's not like you were in the gold, I call it the lucky golden time of the 80s, where people were learning implants and stuff like that. You came when implants were, you know, a known commodity at that point.
Yeah, you know, in school, the surgery and the paro department did a few, you know. Okay. Undergrad, we had zero. I mean, we had no exposure to them whatsoever. Okay. But I come out.
So you didn't know you wanted to do this coming out of school?
Not really. You know, I spent a lot of my dental school career trying to, you know, wanting to get into oral surgery school. I had the opportunity to, and I just decided to go back home. And I just had a kid, and the thought of 4 more years and on call and stuff just didn't appeal to me. So, and I really wanted to go back home, so I thought at the time, and went back and took all this information. And what you find, and you know, we are 2 hours. I'll set the stage. I grew up in this small community where South Dakota, Wyoming, Nebraska butt up. We are 2 hours, 120 miles, or 2 hour drive to the nearest oral surgeon, orthodontist, periodontist, endodontist. So for me to refer someone, they're going to lose a whole day of their life because it's 2 hours up.
Well, multiple times. Because they got to go for the consultation first.
Yeah, which is another story. But yes, so they would. And, you know, my patients kept saying, you know, doc, like, I don't want to go up there. Can't you just take this tooth out? And so I was like, yeah, you know, I just became good at it. And implants were the same thing. And I did a lot of them.
Define a lot, if you don't mind.
In that little hometown, I think the highest I did in there was about 275.
A year. All right. So I like to always stop and put things in perspective. So you were in a town of 1,100 people.
Correct.
What was your radius? What was your dental population? You know, because obviously it wasn't just the town. It was, yeah, you know, probably the 6 hours around it.
There's, you know, within an hour's drive, you're into 3 or 4 counties that don't even have dentists.
Okay.
You know, so.
50,000 people?
No, not that much. I would say in our area, we are probably about 1 to 5,000 people, ratio.
Okay.
So it's a good ratio. So they said, what, we need an 1,800 or something
I don't
like
think
that or whatever
it
is.
Think, yeah.
But
I'm 1 to 980. All right. So you had a ratio of 1 to 5,000 people, but you're in a small town. You wouldn't call your patient base rich.
No. Would you call your patient base rich?
I would call my patient base middle class or a little bit above middle class.
What's your definition of that income wise?
100 grand plus.
Yeah, I'm poor.
Okay.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So,
like, how about this? We can give a perspective. I think in the Raleigh-Durham area, if you want a freestanding home, it's going to be 200, 250 plus.
Yeah, maybe a third of that to a fourth of that at home. Yeah. So, you know, we had a, you know, after doing all this education and getting into implants and stuff, you know, we kind of had a mantra at the office was no dentures, partials, or bridges. And I just, I lived by that. And I, you know, I preached, you know, bone loss and implants being the only real tooth replacement solution for the patients. And when you started looking at every patient as a, you know, if they're missing teeth, how do I replace them? And you treat every, you know, you treat every single person like you would be want to be treated yourself. There was even more implants in that area to do than what I did. I just wasn't as good then as I am today.
Right.
You know, so it wasn't that hard. I mean, people are like, oh my God, I don't have, you know, there's no way I could do that many implants in your practice. Well, I would challenge you to do this. We kind of talked about it.
Yeah,
earlier.
We talked about this
you
earlier.
Know, in your morning huddle, you know.
Well, like, A, they have to have a morning huddle.
Yeah, I know. We're assuming that they've listened to you and they've done a morning huddle. But I would challenge them to the day before they do the huddle is to examine every single patient that's going to come in and see how many edentulous spots they have.
Not including wisdom teeth.
Yeah. And not even including second molars, because I don't really like to restore second molars with implants.
So basically 3 through 14, 19 through 30.
Yeah. And every morning I want you to circle on your whiteboard what, I assume they have one of them too.
Yeah. They can get one on Amazon.com.
Correct.
Here in Raleigh, North Carolina, it can be here in an hour.
Distribution center?
We have Prime now.
Oh, yeah. Excellent.
No, I'm sure you don't have that in South Dakota.
Negative. So I challenge people to go up there and do that for a week and see how many edentulous spots you see in a week, because I think that number will scare the shit out of you.
Yeah,
and
so
it should.
Yeah, so let me, because this is a point of emphasis. So in our show notes, we'll put this down, but I want to make sure, listen. And so when Justin and I would talk, I was walking him through my office in our training center, but we were talking about it and, you know, we don't do that. And I've never really even done that. I think what we should do is you should write down the number of missing teeth you see every day in your practice, first molar and forward. And those are ultimately your candidates. Right. That's your pool of patients that could benefit from implants. And we're not saying that you need to do implants or I'm not even saying you need to talk to them about implants. I'm just saying the first step to decide that if your practice could benefit from you adding implant therapy and learning about it is to figure out what your patient base is. I mean, if you literally have a patient base that all have teeth, then maybe your dental implants aren't for you. Okay. Number one, I'd like to know where in the world you are. Okay. But if you write down and keep track of for 1 month the number of missing teeth you see in your practice, that'll give you an idea of the number of opportunities you have. And all I want you to do is then take that number and multiply by 5%. Okay? And that's your opportunity. I'm not even saying that you need to have 20%, 30%, 50% conversion. I'm just saying if 5%. You 5% conversion. Okay, if you could just convert 5% of those patients into dental implants, just imagine what that would do for you, your practice, your patient base. And, you know, for me, the big picture of that is, what does that do for your practice life? Does that buy you more time off? Does that get you out of debt? Does that allow you to have more freedom? Does that give you more satisfaction because, hey, you don't love doing fillings and crowns and the everyday general dentistry again? You got to look at it. So make sure... Yeah, do this favor for me is just write down the number of missing teeth you see in a month and then, you know, post it on Facebook or post it on our forum or post it, you know, send me an email, send Justin an email and just let us know how many potential implants are in your practice.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hello, podcast family. T-Bone here bringing you our newest live patient implant training, Full Arch Express. For dentists already placing implants and ready to level up and continue building their implant practice, this is the golden ticket. We're diving deep into full arch implants, the hottest game changer in implant dentistry. In this program, we tackle both overdentures and all-annex fixed hybrids, mastering techniques that are essential for modern, comprehensive dental care. It's about getting your hands on the tools and techniques that will replace the doubt and fear with confidence and predictability. Here's the kicker. There's live patient training right here in North Carolina. You're not just learning theories. You're in the operatory doing real work on real patient from start to finish, guided one-on-one by our expert 3D mentors. You'll learn the nuances of each approach, ensuring you can cater to a wide range of patients to maximize revenue. Speaking of revenue, with me, you know it's not just about the clinical skills. We're bringing business into this aspect too, teaching you how to integrate these advanced services profitably into your practice. So are you ready to rise up to the top in implant dentistry? Join us at the Full Arch Express. This isn't just another course, it's a career-defining leap. Head to www.3ddentist.com to enroll in our next session. 3D Dentist is truly committed to helping dentists take control of their practice, finances, and future. Now, back to this week's episode.
The number will scare the hell out of them, and it should. And then throw in, you know, sometimes what gets lost in that number that you put up there is, I want you to write down on the board how many teeth you're going to take out that day, because you're talking about a number that are already a dentulous.
Yeah.
And how about the number that you're going to edentulate that day?
And, you know,
because there's two numbers, and they don't always get posted. And when we talk about edentulating somebody, you know, whether it's one tooth at a time or a whole arch, what about the economic implant of grafting those sites for future implants, or even an immediate if you have that skill set? Because
when if you have about, you need to have that skill set.
Right, because it's the right thing to do. Right. I mean, it's not just, we talk about it being a revenue stream for your practice, but it's how about a revenue that actually is the right thing for your patient.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I had a conversation with Mike Dottola while he was still at Glidewell, and he was telling me that one of the goals that Jim Glidewell had was that we stop doing extractions and instead we start doing tooth replacement therapy. That we in dentistry need to find a way to make it more achievable for more patients to get tooth replaced. And if I can go on a tangent for a second, you know,
it's
I think, well, but you're my guest. I guess that's true. It is my podcast. But, and I'd like your thoughts on this is I think we've made dentistry, I say this somewhat oddly, okay, we've made dentistry too expensive. You know, the average tooth replacement in this country, what do you think, if you take across America, what is the average cost to get a tooth taken out? Sorry, to get a tooth, single tooth replaced, restored, the whole deal.
I'm sure it's over three.
$3,500?
Sure, yeah, I'm sure it's probably, the average is somewhere between $3,200 and $3,600.
Okay, so let's call it $3,500,
sure.
Okay, which is my fee. So the average price is about $3,500. And honestly, that's a lot. And that's a lot for the vast majority of America to handle.
Well, we just talked about it. How many days at $10 an hour does it take to replace a tooth?
$3,500. It'd be impossible, right?
It's impossible.
You know, so that person would have to work 3 months, I mean, to be able to afford that, you know? So we've got to come to reality. And I'm not saying that you need to make less money doing implants. I'm just saying you got to do more of them so that you can be more confident, comfortable to do it. So for example, in my practice, a single tooth to be extracted, implanted, and restored over three visits, a total of about an hour and a half of chair time. Okay, and so, you know, our goal is to make it more affordable for our patients, and I can make it more affordable and still more profitable for me along the way. So what we have to do to make implant dentistry more achievable for people is, first, we have to address the three chief fears they have, time, fear, and money. Okay, one, we have to let people know that implant dentistry isn't what it was in the 1980s, that it can be done guided or flapless and all of those things. It can be done without major surgery. It can be done where it's as painless as a filling or, you know, something like that. Number two, we have to make it more affordable, the money component of it. I would like to see the day where we're able to, maintaining the same profit margins or profit dollars even, do an implant from start to finish at about $2,250, $2,300 is where I think I'd like to see my practice get to. And then number three is we have to address the time. And too many, on average right now, in most practices, if a patient comes to you and needs a tooth removed, it's going to be about seven visits before they get the tooth replaced. And I think that plays a role. So imagine if your dental assistant or your dental hygienist or your dental front office person came to you and said, "Doc, I need to take 7 times off of work to get a tooth put in my head," how that would make you feel. And it's no different for your patients who have JOBs to go ask their employer, or to, if they don't have an employer, say they're self-business, to disrupt their own business to get that done. And so we have to find a way to make it faster, easier, and more affordable for patients to do it.
All right. What you hit on is something that I feel very passionate about myself, because dentistry has gotten too expensive, and we're pricing ourselves, you know, out of the market, and we're leaving a lot of people that need our services behind.
Well, we're also opening up the market for DSOs to come in and really take something that we're not, you know, we're creating our own problem. Right, not if you you view it as a problem.
No, the DSOs. The DSOs are just finding the solution for the problem.
Yeah,
you know, and
they're being smart.
You know, and how do they do that? You know, one of the things that they do is obviously they have a buying power that you and I don't have. So the price of those goods that go in there, they can start to lower their fees by maintaining the you and I's profit type margins by, you know, buying a deal. What I think you and I can do for our profession to help combat this is exactly what I'm looking at. The science is 3D dentists. I think that technology can help us get to those numbers.
It's the equalizer.
It can help us get to those numbers because you just said it was going to take an hour and a half to get that done.
Max.
We need to get that down to 45 minutes.
And I could. I could. I'm saying restored the whole deal.
Right, but I'm saying the same thing. Like, yeah. I think that there's always going to be an inherent price to the overhead of the building and the time and so forth. The more you implants you do, that, you know, you can trim some dollars in there.
I'm gonna buy the website and patent it or trademark it. Implants under an hour.
Can we share it?
No, I already own it.
Oh,
you keep talking while I go on Google and buy it.
But, you know, I was thinking that that technology is going to allow us to do it in cut the time. So when you can see those, when you can see that, all we're doing is selling our own time in small blocks. You know what I mean? That's all the dentist is doing today, is selling their time. It's a customer service business. And if we can create value and provide the service to them in...
Dude, somebody already owns it.
Really?
Yeah, implants in an hour. Damn it, I thought I was just being smart here.
Dang it. But you've hit, and I think technology is the equalizer. Scanning technology is the wave of the future. It's not the wave of the future. It's already here. It's just a matter of who's willing to step up and adapt it and learn and work over the learning curve. That's really what it comes down to.
So. Well, we got to come up with a new name, dude.
All right.
Now I might be in your... Now we can be partners.
But yeah, you know, that's the deal. You know, you said time, fear, or money. Yeah. Well, you know, fear we can combat with sedation. You know,
sedation and technology.
Yeah, sedation and technology.
You know, look, fear is also part of it. Is like when I talk to patients about implants, they tell me their grandma story. You know, my grandma went to a hospital. They wrapped her up and they had a little hole in the towel.
Right.
And they opened her face up.
They looked like they were in space suits, you know.
Yeah, the whole deal, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I think part of that fear is I think that's real. Okay, that's part of the fear as well.
But, you know, sometimes fear also has to do with the fear of the money part.
Yeah.
Fear, you know, a fear of losing that much money or... The fear of the cost of it over the benefit, you know, the cost to benefit analysis that they do in the brain in a matter of seconds that decides whether they're gonna whether they're gonna move forward with it or not. You know, so time, fear, or money. You know, time. I also agree, like, it shouldn't take as many steps. You know, with today's technology and with today's implant designs and the 3D printing and the ability to create custom, you know, screw retained temporaries to give
everything
to give them their tooth replacement same day.
Yeah. I think we can go to final same day pretty soon.
Well, what's to keep you from doing that in select situations? Yeah. Like, you know, everything. I think what got All on Four so much notoriety is they created this protocol that Clear Choice, it's a Nobel trademark, but right. You know, Clear Choice took it and ran with it and said, you know, hey, you know what? We've got a solution that fixes every single person.
Yeah.
And the fact is that I don't necessarily agree with that. But if you know the parameters that you work with, if you understand the physiology and the risk factors ahead of time, there's no reason in most of these cases we can't put temporary restorations on them if they meet the criteria that we know are good sound principles and backed by science. You know, it isn't always 4 months and forget it. And we're also finding that it's not just about replacing that tooth, but it's about what it looks like. When I got into implant dentistry, 20 years ago, it was just about function. Like, I just want my tooth back so I can eat with, or hold my denture.
It's way beyond that now.
It's all about aesthetics.
Yeah.
And the temporary isn't as much about giving the patient their tooth back, but it's about managing the soft tissue and giving us the ability to create an aesthetic result that doesn't have a litigatable following you.
It's preparing the papilla and preserving the papilla.
For sure. You got to preserve the bone to preserve the soft tissue. It's a symbiotic relationship. If you've got bone, you have soft tissue. If you have
soft tissue, the bone sets the tone and the tissue is the issue. Yeah.
So I really hate that saying, but it's really true.
But it's true.
It is true. You know, and what I have found in my own private practice over the course of the last 3 years is the emphasis that I have placed on good keratinized tissue and the either building of it or the preserving of it in the long-term restoration. Because guided surgery helps us in this way too, because it allows us to virtually treatment plan these cases so that we can plan an appropriate sized implant to have at least a millimeter and a half of bone, 360 around the thing. So it has good blood flow so that crest of bone stays where it's going to be. Because
can maintain the interproximal bone for papilla.
Right. If you maintain the bone, you're going to maintain the tissue.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Actually, I'm not. But
no, I know you're not.
Yeah, I do it all the time. I just thought about this, and my mind is so fleeting. If I don't get it out right then and there. When I was growing up learning implants in the early 2000s, okay, like 2004, 2005, everything was being taught that site number 8 had a 4 millimeter implant by 13 or 15 length. That's everything was long implants and wide implants. And what I know now is that it's absolutely the opposite. You put the implant in that supports the site. So if you have, if you need a 3.5 millimeter implant that gives you that 1.5 millimeter bone all the way around it to have the blood supply and everything, that's the appropriate implant.
Correct.
You don't need a 5 millimeter implant unless you have the space to support that. And I think people misunderstand that oftentimes. And listen, I'm a big guided proponent, and I will say that even in when I run my classes on guided surgery, what I see people planning now are bigger implants because they can fish them in the right spot. And I think they miss sometimes the biology of the problem of having bigger implants sometimes.
But I think we have a problem in the dissemination of old information versus new information. And don't get me wrong, I would not be where I was at if I hadn't studied under Carl Mish and done these things. But, his biomechanical principles that he relied on back then were, it's like a bridge pillar. Build a bigger bridge pillar, And as much as he was grounded in science, which he was, what we're finding now in 20 and 30 years having these things out is that the biology is this. The bone needs to have vascularity and it needs to have a certain amount of thickness to be able to maintain itself over the long haul. Like I can make teeth look really nice the day, in a 4 month window. But what does it look like 5 years from now? What's it look like 10 years from now? And that's the true test.
And I'm finding that myself.
Well, for sure. I mean, I'm looking at the stuff that I first placed, and that adds a little bit of a difference too, because the implants that you first placed were probably not the greatest positions, and the implants didn't have science like they do today. Mm-hmm. So there was, it's not apples to apples, but why is the bone receding from those? Well, I thinned that buckle plate too much. I got the fixture head way too far.
Well, the fixture heads were wider than the implants.
Too wide, And the fixture heads were too close together, so they had shitty emergences with no chance to have pillows between them.
Oh, we did tissue level implants, or we didn't bury them deep enough. We didn't have platform switches. We didn't have sloping necks.
We didn't have technologies like laser lock that had soft tissue attachment to the rims. There's a lot of technology today. Tom Lickvish is from Romania, talks about zero bone loss.
Yeah.
Like that's his mantra.
But that should be our goal, right?
The implants I place today, I expect zero bone loss. Yeah. And when I went through my training, you know, the implant that I first started placing, like, you know, it, they would tell you that, hey, you know what, you're going to lose bone down to the first thread, then it's going to stop. Like, who would buy an implant today if that was the like, oh, hey, put the implant in, it's going to lose bone down the first thread, but then it'll stop. Like, no one would buy that implant today.
So tell me where the first thread is, at the very top?
Well, yeah, you know, for sure. I mean, you know, does it have a collar? Does it not have a collar? Is it surface treated? I mean, you know, there's so many things about it. You know, and we talked earlier that if you use good sound surgical principles, they all work.
Yeah.
They do.
The titanium works.
They all work.
I mean, think about it. Our literature from the Brandemark implants are on essentially machined implants. I mean, they're
machine smooth with collars. Yeah. Like, yeah. And they work.
I mean, the worst type of implant, I mean, I don't know if that's the right thing to say, but essentially what's proven to be not the best scenario, and they work great.
Yeah, they worked. They didn't work great, because if they worked great, we wouldn't have added more science to them, you know, today. But you're exactly right. I mean, the first implants that I placed were Sterngold's machine smoothed external hex Brandemark styled screws, and I got hundreds of them out there in function today. Some of them are not aesthetic world beaters today, but
we weren't aesthetic world beaters back then either, you know.
No, we weren't. So I think there's a change in technology. You know, your comment, I've been thinking about this. You know, there's nothing new under the sun.
There's nothing new under the sun. You know, I went on a trip to Egypt, my best trip I've ever been on, 2003. My wife and her family, my in-laws, made me kicking and screaming go to Egypt. I mean, no, really, they did. I didn't want to go. You know, I was, you know, we had just started the George Bush Jr.'s Gulf War, and I didn't want to go. And quite honestly, I probably just didn't want to go with my in-laws. I love them, but, you know, that's...
move on.
Yeah. I better keep moving. No, I love them a lot. And I really do. We've gone a lot of vacations since then. But it was eye-opening to see what our species was able to create in a time where we had no electricity, no mathematics, no, you know, no calculator, no anything that we have today, and how these things stood the test of time. It was, and my tour guide kept saying, you know, I'd ask him, so were they doing brain surgery back then? He goes, there's nothing new under the sun. And then like 3 days later, we'd end up in this one place, and he'd pull me aside. He says, see this hierarchy, you know, whatever, you know, how they, you know, so draw on the walls or whatever they did. They said, see, that's surgery in the brain. And that's 4,000 years old. I'm like, you're kidding me. And I remember I said, what about teeth? Were they replacing teeth? And sure enough, you know, the next day or 2 days later, he showed me a mandible or a jaw that had a nail, you know, nail in it. And so it's quite amazing that there's nothing new under the sun today.
That is a that's a statement that I like I said, I've been pondering that for about an hour after you've said that, and it's really kind of true.
And we were talking about it in the sense that nothing we teach is ours.
Well, it's not.
I mean,
it's not like, you know, I didn't create any of the stuff that I teach, and everything that I teach is a culmination of a lot of individuals. And truthfully, you know, my association with you, and especially your thoughts and your visions and how you, you know, look at your office in small aspects is influenced my thinking going forward.
Yeah, we should influence each other, right?
I mean, correct.
You know, and listen, what I teach is a culmination of, you know, listen, I don't teach anything that I think somebody should go back and 100% implement, because that's a bad idea. Because what I do in my practice works for my personality, my leadership style, my patient base, my things that I've set up. What's important is anything you learn, you've got to make it your own. You know, you've got to figure out, hey, what did I learn? How did I do it? How did I put this into my practice? How do I nuance this to make it fit my team and all of that? So, you know, there's nothing that we're teaching that isn't borrowed from somebody else. So,
right.
So speaking on teaching, we had a conversation about the difference between speakers and trainers.
Mm-hmm.
So
they're two different species.
Yeah, because oftentimes I hear people that are speakers, that are professional speakers. In other words, they go out and they talk, and most of the time, not all the time, okay, but generally many of them are showing how, look how great I am, look what I've done, look what I have. And like that motivates people, which I don't think it does. And then I break people down into people that are trainers. And I like your word better. They're mentors. In other words, people that do, hey, let me bring you into my office. Let me show you what I'm doing. Let me give you information and show you exactly how to take it back to your practice. And they're two different people.
I think some of the differentiation between, you know, a professional speaker and the trainer slash mentor, which I like to prescribe to, and that is the greatest compliment you could pay me would be to say, you know, I really feel like you're, you know, one of my mentors, yeah, you know, in my implant career or my life or whatever it is. And, you know, the greatest email that or text message I could get would be, you know, a picture of, you know, your first implant that you placed or the, you know, that nice restoration you put on it. Like, and that mentorship goes beyond that because it's accessibility. You know, how often do you have the opportunity to listen to a professional speaker? I'm not here to, bash on Carl Mish, but you know, that wasn't an approachable style thing, you know, like.
He was Carl Mish, man. He was like implant God.
I know, but at the same time that he ended up being a little more professional speaker than he was trainer or mentor because I never had his cell phone. Yeah. You know, like if I send him an email, he's not going to answer me back. And I think that for me, I don't have to train and I don't want to train hundreds of people at a time because I can't make a difference in 100 and some people's lives because I don't have that kind of bandwidth. But these smaller courses like your training center with 12 is absolutely ideal. Like that is.
But people have to understand they have to pay a little bit more for that. And that's the challenge that as trainers that we find is that when you can put 36 in a class, I can't put 12 in a class and charge the same. I just can't.
You cannot.
My overhead is probably more because I don't have the cost. I don't have the numbers to justify buying things in bulk and things like that, you know?
And I also, you've made a couple posts that, you know, most people found not true. And I definitely find it true. And someone had said, why would you want to spend the $300 on a, you know, top five implant brand out there when you could buy an Israeli one for $68 or whatever? Yeah. And you made the point that the Israeli one is not going to put any money in R&D. The Israeli one is not going to have a rep that's going to come and help the doctor that may need it, that office that may need someone to help them to even figure out how to set up the surgical motor. Yeah. You know,
like simple things. Simple, like use an impression post.
Yeah, that are so valuable to the workflow. And if we all bought that $60 implant, then a lot of the innovations and the things that we use today would go away because there's no money in it. Yeah. And the same thing happens in the training mentorship is that if you only want to spend $100 for a course, you're only going to get $100 worth of information because there's nothing, it can't be put on. You can't have the kind of facility you have here and the dedication to the success. Like you are dedicated to giving those people the best opportunity to have success with what you're going to give them.
Yeah, but I'm also giving them, and this is not about my courses or your courses, but the mindset's there. I'm also giving them myself, right? You know, they have my cell phone number. They 100%. Have my email address. They have Lori's number. They know how to get in touch with me. Not only that, when we have courses, they have Liz's, they have access to Liz. They have access to Melissa, Megan, you know, Angela, my team as well, because, you know, we're dedicated to their success. And I want to go back on that. Maybe this is just me, but, the text messages and emails I get usually not look how great my implant is. Mine are usually like, what did I do wrong here? I would say that's almost even a more, that is almost even more powerful because that means you made somebody comfortable to share their not so perfect with you.
You are correct. And, you know, I get those. You know,
maybe I just deal with dumb people.
That's not true at all. You know, you get those as well. And, you know, my teaching style is more of, I don't show a lot of like perfect cases and so forth. I am way more apt to show you what happens if you don't do it within these parameters, and then maybe how you can help fix it or how you got to replace it or whatever. But you learn way more from the mistakes that have been made over time than you ever would by showing somebody like, hey, put it in this spot. You'll have this perfect outcome, and now go do it like that. It doesn't work that way, because, you know, we work on humans.
Yeah.
Like every one of them is different, and they carry a different story with them, both biologically, psychologically.
Well, I was talking to you about that at dinner today.
Yeah, the whole thing.
You know, how I've had patients 5 years down the road where, you know, their health drastically changes, and now my implants are failing.
It's unfortunate that our profession somehow over time has developed this mantra of whatever is done in the mouth is a permanent solution.
It's not.
Well, it's far from it. No. You know, it's like...
It's no different than a hip or a knee.
I'm unsure why physicians are given this latitude and not dentists, because it starts from the lobby. No one goes to a physician and expects to be taken back on time. No one.
No.
And they'll sit in the lobby for hours for the physician. If I sat out here... If I was sitting behind there and you had a room full here, if they're 10 minutes, 5 minutes past, you got the watchers and the,
yeah,
you know, making sure they can hear your sigh, like, you know, like,
why? And then we're just as bad, because we get up and say, I apologize, you know, the whole deal.
Nobody in a medical office gets up and says, I'm sorry, it's late.
They look at you like, what do you expect?
Yeah, I mean, you're at the doctor's office. Like,
I think one of the things the physicians have done very well from a surgical side of things is they never, ever tell somebody anything is forever. They've never guaranteed they work even. You know, I find this in my first 5, 6, 7 years of practice, I used to have a 10-year guarantee on anything I did. And that was just stupid. I mean, quite frankly. And because nothing lasts forever. I mean, you know, if you get a knee replacement, they tell you, you're going to have this redone. You get a hip replacement, you're going to have this redone. You know, my father-in-law, for example, had quadruple bypass. They were up front. Listen, you know, this is not forever. You know, this doesn't fix you. And I think in dentistry, I think names like lifetime dentistry or lifetime guarantee.
Yeah, we did it to ourselves.
We're doing it to ourselves.
For sure.
You know, and this immediacy to give back money if something fails, you know, and it's not about the money, but it's the precedent it sets and the thing it creates and how we all, in a way, are competitive with each other. And, well, if Justin's giving money back, I better give money back. I'll just give my money back and $50 for the inconvenience, right?
You know, I love our profession. I mean, I think that I wouldn't trade it for any of the other health professions, but there is something that the physicians do or don't do that we as a profession do, and that's bus drive. Like, it's really hard to get other physicians to turn on another physician, you know, about work or a diagnosis or whatever. Yet here in dentistry, like, you could go down the street with a treatment plan and...
Oh, you didn't need all that.
Oh, God, you know, that's true. And that's over treatment plan, you know, and no one does that anymore. Like my answer is, like, who does that today? Like, I have this, you know, when a new associate comes into my system... You know, the first thing that we talk about is the anti-bus drive. And I was like, you know, the quickest way for me to show you the door is for you to start running down another dentist to try to sell your work. I said, because that's not what's going to happen. Because you better give every single dentist that came before you the benefit of the doubt that they did the best job they know how to do that day.
Yeah, and in that condition.
In that condition, you don't know what those conditions were. So you've got to assume that they did the best job that they could physically and mentally do under those conditions and that day under those circumstances. And you let that go, because if you see that endo that's short, don't have the first thought that I can take that out and replace it. My first thought is like, why did it end up short? Is it calcified?
Nobody makes an intention to leave it short.
Correct. So your first thought should be, why was it short, and what makes me think?
Well, especially how about this, a multi-rooted teeth. If there's 3 roots there and 2 of them were the right length and 1 short, nobody in their right mind says, I'm going to leave that one short purposely.
No one.
Yeah.
No one. So what makes you, what makes you think that you're going to be able to do any better job?
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, quit it. Like, a profession needs to quit it. You know, don't know. That's kind of a little soapbox of mine.
That's all right.
Yeah.
So real quick, Justin, let's give, so I didn't even ask you that. I didn't give you the benefit of this. So what do you own one practice, multiple practice? What's your deal?
Yeah, we have 6 general dentistry offices and then my surgical center. So okay. There's associates in these dental offices.
Okay.
And
so you're a multiple practice owner?
Yeah, I am.
Are you 100% owner of all these practices?
I am.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
So
are they associated with any DSOs or they're just your practice?
Just me.
Just you. How did you get into that?
You know, 12 years ago, I opened, it's longer than that. I wanted more. Really what it was is I came down and I wanted more implants. Okay. So I went and opened a satellite office and bought a guy out that had retired. And really all I was buying was his office and
the real estate.
Yep. So went 60 miles one day a week, you know, to see new patients and have a new pool of patients. And then it turned into 2 days a week. And pretty soon I built a new office down there and hired an associate and put them in there. We did, we acquired another office. We built a de novo office.
And de novo means scratch start.
Scratch start office. Just did another de novo office just August of last year.
Do you intend to build more?
You know what I'm more concerned about today? I don't look much at the demographics like, this town needs one, you know, or this and that. Mine today is driven by people. I don't care if you're a young dentist or an old dentist or whatever, like a dentist comes and talks to me and has the same principles that I have and a drive to do it, and they don't have the wherewithal or the ability to do that, I'm more likely to build something around that person.
Okay.
Than I am like picking the demographics.
So in other words,
you want to find
the associate first, maybe?
I always find the associate first. And I know that you're kind of going through that process now. And I've done it both ways.
I'm going through that process because like you, I want the right person. I don't just need a warm body in here. If I needed a warm body, it'd be a different story.
You know, there's plenty of warm bodies. But the right fit for you has to be the right fit for you, has to be the right fit for the lady that sits behind that counter, has to be the right fit for the treatment coordinator because it's a family here. I mean, we spend more time with our teams than we ever do our families.
Mm-hmm. No question.
No question. So, you know, how long do you date your wife before you marry them? It's the same type of thing when you pick an associate.
When I met her, I was just waiting for her to say yes. So, I mean, it could have been like, if she said yes after 1 hour, I would have said yes too.
Really?
No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, shit. Same principle though. I mean, you gotta vet them. I mean, you gotta figure it out because
I call it earning their right.
Yeah. Because, you've got to figure out, you know, ethics and things like that, but you got to make sure that they're in it for the right reasons because you built your practice and it's obvious here on the right reasons.
Yeah.
And like one bad apple, and I've had them, and I've had to get rid of them, and
it hurts.
It more than hurts.
Yeah, and you know, and and it's interesting. I got the other day. I got somebody was like, "Why are you so selfish about your practice?" I go, "Because it's my practice. You know, I want it to be about what I want. And if I'm not happy, nobody around me is going to be happy. You know, I learned that about 8-9 years ago. That if I do things based on what others want, I'm going to be unhappy. And that if I do things based on what I want and I surround myself with people that are like-minded, then we're all going to be happy. And that's really my goal. My goal is to, I want to drive the vision of what we want to do. I want to surround myself with people who can tolerate me, who can like me, who are like-minded as me. And then that way we'll all be happy together.
And when you find that person, a person's out there, they don't know it yet.
Yeah.
They don't know that they're going to get to walk in this door in this office every day and go to work. And they also don't know that what an amazing and wonderful opportunity they're about to have.
Right. And part of it also has to be is they have to understand how to cultivate that their own opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to move off of this topic pretty quickly, but what I'm finding is associates want it. They want you to mentor them. And I'm of the school where you need to ask to be mentored more than somebody needs to mentor you, because I don't want to spin my wheels mentoring somebody that's not interested in being mentored.
Well, it's no different than, you know, it's a proven fact. If you give stuff for free, there's no value in it,
right.
You know, so it's the same kind of thing. Like, I used to send all my new associates to the COIS Center because I thought that I needed them to understand what I did, you know, right off the bat. But the fact is they didn't really understand anything yet at all. And the the real value came and when they, and I just had this happen with one of my associates, real value came was like, I'm ready for the next step. Like I need, like
yeah, like they is, need to come like, to you and say, yeah, hey.
And they did, you know, yeah. And I'll be using, you know, honest, you know, Danny is in my old mothership in my old hometown. It's also his hometown. And he just recently, you know, we recently had a meeting after I go to his office one day a month, okay. You know, to check things out. And really, you know, he will set up, he'll do like, you know, he did a sinus augmentation that day. I didn't help him, but he knew I was in the building. And that was peace of mind for him to get through one of his first ones.
Yeah, so he purposely schedules you on the day.
He purposely schedules what he needs to do while I'm there so that, you know, if he has an issue, you know, he can get that mentorship. And after, you know, after work, you know, one of the things he asked me was, he goes, I'm ready for the next step. He goes, I think I need, you know, to go somewhere. And I said, well, what are you thinking? And he goes, well, I think I need to go to COIS to start my journey. And I said, well, I said, take the first, you know, I'll pay for the first course and I'll judge on your,
actions and implementation.
Yeah. You know, and when it gets back. And, he was like, you know, I appreciate the opportunity. And I said, well, and I told him, I said, I appreciate you coming to me with your thoughts. That's, you know, that's the difference.
Yeah, the only thing I do differently there is I say I'll pay 50% of it. So that's all.
Yeah. Well, he's got to pay his way out there and he's got to have his loss of income and so forth. So
let me ask you, when you started learning, did anybody pay for you to take these classes? Did somebody pay your way out there? Did somebody pay for your loss of income?
No.
Okay.
No.
So I that's okay.
Maybe at the society. Yeah, I get it.
That's okay. Eventually I'll come around. So Justin, okay. I want to make sure we get to this because we're going to go long and not that I have something to do, but I don't want to go long on the podcast again. How can someone learn from you in the sense of how to do more implants in their practice? You know, I'm not looking to do the numbers you do. Okay. I'm just looking to do. I'd like general dentists to do 100 implants a year.
I mean, 100 is a good number. I mean, some people are like, oh, that's a lot of implants. And I was like, it goes back to those same numbers we were talking about. Like, if you really understood the amount of edentulism and the amount of teeth that you take out in your own practice, and then you just insert 100 tooth replacements into the deal, you'd be like, yeah, if you look at the 100 number, you'd be like, well, I'm not really hardly making a dent in the in my population. Yeah. But I get what you're saying. You know, that's
we can't get to 100. We can't, you know.
You can't get to those bigger numbers without doing the first 100. And, and so
I'm saying 100 annually.
Right. I mean, but the first 100 is the most important because the, you know, the literature shows that the first 100 implants, you have a much poorer success rate than the second 100 because of skill set. You know, the way, you know, of the inexperienced, you know, doctor. But how do you get experience? Well, you got to get up and do them and you got to go do them. And what I love to do is teach people at that ground zero. Like I want to take people that have never had experience or people that have had experience and they just want to get another feel because I don't care if you've done a maxi course. I don't care if you've done a, you know, someone else's institute. I feel like this is one of the biggest questions I always get. It's like, hey, you know, I went through so-and-so's institute and, you know, what is it? What is the, what's in it for me? It's like, is this going to be all repeat stuff? And I said, well, you know what? I don't know what
so-and-so teaches.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what their curriculum is, but what I do know is that there's zero chance that it's the same and you're going to get something out of my course, whether you've taken a million courses or not, that should be worth the tuition that you paid when you leave. And if you got one more focus of view from someone else of how to do something, now you're starting to make a collaborative treatment plan based upon the knowledge that you've gained, you know, from multiple sources, and your patient's going to win and you're going to win in the long end. So take the course. And you know, and if you really didn't learn one single thing to make it worth your time there, like I always tell people, I was like, then I'll give you your damn money back. I've never had to give anybody their money back, you know, never. So we took years, you know, I tried an institute once in Denver and it, you know, we didn't make it long-term, you know, we regrouped and, did some soul searching and figured out like, hey, you know what, how did I do it? And I mean, how did I come across this? And one of it was, let's make it, you got to make it easier to do what you want to do.
Yeah.
So one of it was we took some of the things that you don't need to fly all the way across the country to take, like pharmacology or implant rationale. Important for your foundation. For
you got to know it.
You got to know it.
Whether you're guided or not guided, whether you're digital, not digital, whether you're new, young, old, it doesn't matter. You got to know.
There's a basis of science that you've got to learn that you don't have to fly all the way across the country to learn it and fall asleep after lunch or whatever it is, but you do have to have it. So we took that into an online module. There's 16 one-hour modules in our session one of the implant pathway. And then we have two in-person sessions that we get to actually interact with the attendees, and that's the most important part.
Are most of your clients, I don't know what the right word is, new to implants?
I'd say about 70% are new to implants. The other 30 have some experience, and for some reason, you know, just failures to launch or slow launchers, you know.
Why do you think people are failure to launch?
You know, some of it is, you know, maybe how you were set up education-wise. Some of it is a reliance on, you know, it looked easy when someone was there over your shoulder on a Typodont. Mm-hmm. But then at some point in implant dentistry, you got to go back to your office, numb somebody up, and lay a scalpel to the tissue.
Or a tissue punch, but nonetheless, something.
Yeah. You got to see some blood at some point. So. And at some point, you're going to, if that's still a little light in your wheelhouse, at some point, you know, you got to think about it that night and you're just like, oh my God.
I think that's the number one reason for failure to launch.
It is.
I think people take didactic education. They watch it being done. They do it on Typodonts. Typodonts don't have nerves. Typodonts don't bleed. Typodonts, you can reposition implants very easily. You know, you can glue things back together again.
Right.
And I think they get back to their practice and they're scared. And what I loved about what you're doing is you have a solution to this.
We do. It's session four. We do a live implant training in Phoenix where it's a culmination of what we've learned. We take it to the clinic where we have patients that are pre-screened medically. They're some of the most deserving people on the planet, you know, veterans that are, you know, trying to rebuild their lives and get some tooth replacements, smiles, you know, it might be as simple as just hanging a denture on a couple implants to give them the ability to chew again, you know, that self-confidence that they need. So we have the opportunity in a beautiful facility at the Brighter Way Foundation to treat these patients, and we have 3 days of implant placement.
And the average person that goes through your program at that weekend, how many implants do they place? 10, 15, 20, 800?
It could be as little as, you know, 6 to 8.
Okay.
It could be as high as 20.
It depends on how aggressive. I don't want to use the word aggressive.
No, it is.
How motivated they are.
100%.
I think the word aggressive means like slam. My mind is you slamming. I think it's how motivated you are. Like when I go, if I went to that program, I'd be like lining up. Like, how fast can I get it done? You know, hey, Justin, I'd be greasing the wheel. Hey, I want this. I want that, you know. So I think there's part of that. And some people are just slow and methodical and they're happy with 3, 4, 5, 6 cases.
I think when you look at that, you know, in your class, you're going to have those that are going to take quite a while to do one, you know, their very first one, which is perfectly fine. I mean, it's, you know, as long as they're learning and gathering that didactic, hands-on feel for what, you know, bone and tissue and stuff is worth. But then you're going to have that is like, you know, I've been doing implants, you know, singles for a while, never done a full mandible. You know, I've never done 4 between the framens. And, you know, that one may excel. You know, and we have what's awesome about the clinic is we have that opportunity. So within the pathway and the first two sessions that you see me in person and through the hands-on that we do in those, you get a feel for what they need and what they,
what the students are good for.
I know what they want to get. So then when they're ready to go to Phoenix, we can line up just edentulous molar areas and abundant bone on healthy people and let them just get the what they need to do to go home and get that background of you know, having some initial success, because that's the biggest thing. Like, you want to go back and have some good success. You know, patient selection for your first, I say 100. Once you've done 50, like, you're going to start moving into areas that you're, you know, testing your comfort zone. Mm-hmm. But you should go have some initial success first. Like, don't do an immediate number 8 on a diabetic your first run out. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's not.
I know what you mean. It's, you know, it's interesting. I'm only laughing because I can't tell you how many times, and it doesn't happen as much anymore, I think, because I don't send this vibe out there anymore, but how many times I get a call from somebody and they've just bought a cone beam and they say, hey, I just bought a cone beam. I placed a few implants, but I've got my first full arch case. I need you to help me with it. And I'm like, so you want me to help you with a more complex case remotely, right? And so I don't get it as much as I used to. But, you know, I politely declined to assist in those situations. And it's just, it's amazing to me how people, how sometimes we, the path, I love the word pathway because to me, my implant journey started molars. Okay. Then I moved to immediates. Then I moved to anteriors. And then I moved to full arches. And so, you know, that's been my pathway.
That pathway, I wish everyone followed that pathway, because if you followed that pathway, your pathway is going to lead to a very rewarding implant career.
Oh, yeah. Because
you know, what happens, and I see it over and over, and even if you preach it, you know, some just are more cavalier than other. And, you know, when your first three or four implants that you see, you're just broken teeth, and you're like, you know, no better time than now, you know, let's get after it. And then two of the four or three of the four fail, mm-hmm. then you hang it up in the box and the motor sits in the corner and gathers dust because the sting from that is more than you're willing to go back and go do.
Well, people say, hey, I'm ready to try my first implant. It's a number 8 on a 25-year-old. Like, you're nuts.
Right, you know, like don't.
Don't.
Like,
I mean, don't.
Like, ruin I would it. Like to refer
don't,
that out.
Don't ruin it for our profession. You know, but listen, I was, and this is a broader point. You know, I was, I don't want to say I was rich because I wasn't. In my mind, I'm still not. But I was very comfortable financially and never financially motivated. So early in my implant career, when somebody came in with a front tooth, I said, listen, you know, look, Justin, I do a fair number of implants. You know, right now my major focus on the implants is in the back teeth. They're more forgiving. You know, Justin, what you need is a front tooth implant. It's a little bit more complex. Quite frankly, I want to help you with this and I'll get you to the right person, but I'm not going to place that implant. I'll work with you. I'll quarterback the case. I'll restore it. I'll do all of those things so you get the result that I want you to have. But right now, surgically, I'm going to have you go see XYZ to have that place. And it was hard to do because it's hard to say no to the money, certainly. But it paved the way for me to have good successes, not to have any, you know, any...
It's reputation maintenance, too.
Well, that, and, you know, listen, you know, I didn't want to get gut punched and get gun shy.
Right.
You know, so I didn't want those big failures. You know, and a failure in a back tooth, you can get over that. But a failure in the front tooth, man, you lose tissue, you lose buckle plate.
It's catastrophic.
You know, like, it's a big deal.
It's a huge deal, and the rebuild of it, A, is not easy, it's not predictable, yeah. And it's almost never like it was once before.
No, it's grafted bone, so it's not as vascular.
It's never the same. Yeah. It's never the same. So
what would you be your, let's say, what would you be your number one advice to somebody that's, let's do two different questions, okay? Selfishly, I'm asking this, okay? Mm-hmm. So you're talking to somebody that's brand new to implants, never placed one, whatever. What would be your, tell them their first step is to get started?
The first step is to take a course.
Okay.
I mean, it is. I mean, the first step is to
explore. But how do I choose? There's so many.
Well, there's a ton of them. I mean, you've got to choose based upon your feel. You know, like everyone has a different teaching personality and a different style. And, you know, what is it that you're after? I mean, is this something that you're trying to, you know, there's different levels too. And we see this in the younger, the docs too, is that they want to be everything and everything. Like they want to, you know, they want to go straight to full arch. They want to do all this stuff that they see is really, but you got to kind of, you got to crawl before you run.
Yeah. You got to crawl before you walk.
Right. Right. You know? And so, you know, when I would tell them, say, you know what, hey, you know, find something that fits your style, you know, that, how's it going to work with your environment? You know, for us, if I can do this in a town of 1,100 people, and you know, like, you know, it's the same kind of thing. It's like, if you can do this, you can do it anywhere. Like, it doesn't matter if you got 50 dentists in two blocks, or if you have 50 dentists in, you know, 200 miles. It's there's always room for a good dentist, and patients always have, you know, patients yeah. always have that tolerance for it. So that's what I tell them. Is
well, that you're not being self-serving enough. So let me help people.
I know. I'm not.
Okay. Well, we talked about this.
I'm not very good at
that.
No,
but I'm not being self-serving towards you. But I would say, let me say this. I think there's multiple criteria I look for in implant education. And I wasn't fortunate enough to have these criteria. Okay. All of them. I would say number one, first and foremost, when you take education, it would be somebody with a like personality, somebody that you enjoy learning from.
Right.
Okay. So if you're a science learner, get a science teacher. Okay. If you're a fun learner, get a fun teacher. Okay. If you need a little bit of both, find somebody that's a little bit of both, you know, because you want a good learning experience. So you want to find somebody who appeals to you. I would say that first and foremost. Number two, specific to implants, I would say only go to a course that offers some type of live patient program. So if you go to a program that doesn't give you the opportunity to actually place implants on human beings, I don't think it's as good as a program. I just don't think it's the right fit for most people. My personal opinion. Okay. And granted, you know, for all these years, all these programs didn't have that. And we produced many great implantologists. Okay. But I think in today's world, you need to have that. And number three, and this may be controversial a little bit, I believe you have to get some local backup for somebody to help you grow while you're in your area. So for me, that was my oral surgeon. I went to him and said, hey, listen, I'm going to do this whether you like it or not. And I would prefer if you to like it. And I want you to know I need your help so I can learn and do more and get bailed out if we ever need to get bailed out. And he was more than gracious enough to go above and beyond in that journey. And I think those are the three things people need to have a great outcome and great education. And so...
Well, I think you're right, and that's what we've created. When I talk about, you know, somebody that's your style, that's the likability.
Yeah.
You know, you gotta, you know, you're right. If you're all science based, and you only want to learn about what's in the literature, then that's the kind of person you need to go to.
Yeah.
You know, but we all know about literature. You know, right. Versus you know, someone that might take it a little more lighthearted, like for me
Me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean,
like people
for
like
sure.
us.
Yeah. I mean. You should go to a course that offers Fireball.
Yes, of course, right?
I mean, like, you should go to a course that offers Fireball at the end of the day, and you should go to one, I 100% agree, that has a live implant placement component to it. Yeah. But I think what we do better than anyone else is we restore. We teach you the restorative.
Well, I think you do it in the U.S., you're doing it on deserving, very much, define deserving. What are your patient base? Veterans?
Yeah, veterans. You know, most of the people that go through there, they're not the homeless person sleeping in the gutter. Like we're talking about people that have maybe been homeless, lived in the shelter, and are now in a group house or even their own apartment, and are starting to get their job.
They're the working class people of the United States of America.
100%.
The forgotten people, in a way.
All the time.
Yeah.
All the time. So.
And so you're doing it in the U.S. in Phoenix.
Yep.
And people get to restore and place implants?
Yeah. Okay. The majority of the restorations are on dentures.
Dentures,
you know, removable prosthesis because, A, you know, we can take impressions one day. We have an on-site laboratory that makes dentures, so we can have it done the next day. I mean, there's – which is not – you know, the clinic isn't set up like – yours is with, you know, CEREC and stuff. Yeah. Hopefully one day we can get some donation and stuff that we could start to move that way for the single units. But a lot of these people, as much as we need, you know, to find the single units and stuff, which we do have, a lot of these people need dentures held in.
Yeah.
That's a big set of population.
Well, listen, what is it? One quarter to one third of the adult population over the age of 65 will be a dentulous?
Correct.
So we need that.
Right. And it's funny because people are like, oh, well, edentulism is on the decline. Well, the population, the rate that the population is increasing is outpacing the rate of edentulism. So it's never going away.
No, it's impossible.
It's impossible.
And nobody loves dentures. I've never met a single person that loves their dentures.
You know, Dr. Massad probably likes dentures, but...
No, I'm talking about patients.
Oh, right, I'm talking about patients. Yeah, there are a few dentists that like them, but you're exactly right. I mean, nobody is... I mean, there's nothing in dentistry that we are more aware of than the problems associated with a lower denture. I mean, name one dental condition that people are more aware of the problem with than the lower denture.
Yeah.
It doesn't exist. Like, that is problem number one in dentistry for the patient. Is the lower non-retained denture.
All right, last question, and this one's very selfish, okay? How does somebody that go from placing 100 to 150 implants and double it? How can I learn from you to get my practice to place more implants? What is it that I need?
It's multifaceted. For one, you can learn and be the best surgeon on the planet, but if you don't get your team to speed and be able to talk the talk, like if your team... I talk about there's two buy-ins with your team, and I think there's sometimes they happen simultaneously. Sometimes there's a lag between them. But when your team buys into dental implants, and that buy-in is that if they were missing a tooth, they are educated to know that the only real tooth replacement for that is a dental implant. So that when someone's on the phone or they're down on the street corner at the grocery store and someone says, oh, I just had this tooth pulled. Well, you know, they're going to be like, you need to have a dental implant. I mean, it holds bone. It does these things, you know, all the things. But the second real buy-in is when your team has that conversation and said, you know what? I only want, you know, you should come to see my dentist because that's the only one I would have to place my implant. There's a difference between the buy-in of the procedure itself and then the buy-in of your skill set and why it's so important that they do the implant because they're that good. And when you get that and you put the systems into your practice, you know, the looking for the edentulism, you know, teaching the team where it's at, how do we, you know, incentivize them, whatever it is, that coupled with technology to increase the skill set of the doc, you can take the practice as big as you want.
I would add one thing to that, maybe. I would become a little analytical and look at the types of, not brand of implants, but the type of implants we're doing. Are you doing all edentulous sites? Are you doing all posteriors? Are you doing, you know, all whatever it is? Are you doing all implants that you can't, only when they don't require grafting? And I would say maybe that you have to go beyond your current skill set and then add something. And I think in my opinion, the easiest area or the biggest opportunity area that I see right now is the immediate placement. A lot of people I talk to don't do immediate placement. They take out teeth, they graft the site, they let it heal, and then they wait the solid 4 to 6 months and then they go back in place. And I think there's a lot of opportunity to immediate load or delayed immediate placement people aren't leveraging enough.
For sure. My practice is different than most. I mean, it's a referral based implant practice.
Your one practice, your surgical center.
Yeah. My particular practice.
But your other six practices are
general dentist.
General dentist.
And, my practice is probably half broken tooth, fix a tooth. Mm-hmm. And I do a ton of immediates. And that is one, you're exactly right. That is one way to.
Because most surgeons aren't doing that.
Virtually zero.
Yeah.
Virtually zero. Because they don't, it's not that they can't do it, but they don't understand it from a restorative aspect of how important it is to, if you can set the site up during the immediate extraction, all those things that we talked about earlier can be preserved instantaneously and the patient might walk out with a tooth the same day too. Like it's the next evolution to implant dentistry.
And that goes back to my statement that me and Mike DiTolo were talking about, that mm-hmm. we want to move towards tooth replacement therapy.
Right.
The tooth comes out in the right biological conditions, an implant goes in.
And we've been, you know, that's, you know, that's...
I mean, when does the patient have the most bone?
It's always the time of extraction. I mean,
It's the day you take the tooth out.
I mean, you know, bone loss is 10 times greater the first year than all the subsequent years combined. Like, you know... Even grafting, even the best graft loses buccal bone.
Yeah.
You know, like it's the immediate implant is an important, valuable tool in your tool bag. And when your skill set gets to the point where you can do that, then your practice is at a different level.
I want to ask you another question. I know we're way
I thought
over.
You were limited by one.
No, but okay. I'm not.
It is your podcast.
It's my house, too. Yeah, it's my office.
I am a guest in your office.
And you're depending on me for a ride home.
Hey, don't kid yourself.
I got Uber. I know. But I've never understood this. And we may edit this out. I don't know. But I've never understood this. What is this obsession with 8 millimeter wide implants for molars for immediate placement? My perspective of that is that's a bad thing, I think, that you would put such a wide implant in that would encroach on the buccal plate or the lingual plate.
It is a bad. If the 8 millimeter implant comes at the expense of the buccal plate, then it's a terrible choice for an implant. So I do think that the wide-bodied implant has its place.
I'm talking about super wide-body, not the 5 or 6 millimeter implant. I'm talking about the 7, 8, 9 millimeter wide.
Right, implant. Like a big old Southern 9 by 11 or whatever. it cannot come at the expense of the buckle plate.
And define the expense of buckle plate. You need millimeter and a half left.
Millimeter and a half. I mean, if your implant is shoved up against the buckle plate, and even if you say, oh, you know, I've got it measured at 1.5.
That's not enough. There's going to be some resorption.
There's going to be some resorption. And does that buckle plate, does that thick buckle plate have any vascularization to begin with? Because it's all cortical plate.
Did you flap? Then it's lost its vascularity from the periosteum.
Right. I mean, there's so much to that that I think, again, people use those ultra, I call them ultra wide bodies.
Yeah.
I think they use those ultra wide bodies as a crutch.
To get stability.
As a crutch to get stability.
I think it's bad, personally. I know you can't, you might not. I do have
an opinion on them.
I don't see the need for them.
I carry them as a tool in my toolbox, but it's one a month.
Yeah.
You know, and that's because that person might have
15 millimeter wide ridge.
They might have a 13 wide ridge. Mm-hmm. I mean, they might have it, and my placement of that implant, because those ultra wide bodies, what other thing people don't teach and they don't talk about is the wider the platform, the deeper you got to drive it.
Yeah.
Like it can't be super.
Because you have an emergence.
You have to have an emergence. So the bigger it is, the deeper you drive it. And now you're saying, well, how many people actually have that depth now to be able to place that big wide body?
Otherwise, you get a mushroom on a stick.
For sure. So that's what I'm saying. Like it can be a tool in your toolbox, but it's not for every molar that walks in the door. Like it's got to be, it's got to fit that circumstance. Yeah. You know, the implant that I use 90% of the time in the molar is 5.8 wide. 5.8 wide.
Yeah, that's okay size.
That's the predominant implant.
And you're using always the platform shift implant from BioHorizons?
I do. I use Tapered Plus and all.
That's the plus or the
Tapered Plus.
They all call them all the plus implants. The Tapered Plus implants.
Yep.
The built-in platform switch.
Yep. Built-in platform shift with the laser lock collar.
Yeah.
So.
It's good.
Yeah. That's.
Any other words of wisdom?
If you want to do the implants, like you just got to get out and do it. Like, you know, at some point, it's like, I know you know this about technology too. Like at some point, you know how many people sit on the side of the fence and they say, you know what, the purple cam's coming out in a few months. I'm just going to wait for that. You know, like, well, you know what? Screw the purple cam. Like, you know, when the purple cam comes out, the blue cam's got the rep's got a hell of a deal on that one. Yeah. Like, buy that one. Like at some point. You got to jump off and you got to do it. And implants are the same way. Like if you wanted to learn them, you know, come take the course. You know, come take the course. Like
whether it's yours, whether it's mine, whether it's anybody's.
At a minimum of taking the course, even if you end up going through all of it and the only implants you ever place are in the live surgery session, and you get back and you say, you know, this just isn't for me.
You've learned.
But what you have learned is, A, you're going to learn that implants are the right thing for tooth replacement. You're going to learn that now you've chosen to use a periodontist or a surgeon or whoever it is. You're going to know what you need to tell them to get the product that you want to get back. And you've learned how to restore that once they give it back, which that is still a value for what we charge.
Absolutely. I have a different perspective on this, Justin. And it just popped in my head and we had talked about it earlier at dinner. So now I'm going to talk to the 35 plus year old dentist. Maybe even call it 40 year old plus dentist. When I got out of dental school in 1999, my first 10 years were being a restorative dentist. And then I started adding these procedures. And I would say that the vast majority of people of my generation, and your generation too, Justin, you know, you're an outlier. They're slowly adding these procedures to their practice now. But what I'm seeing is that these whippersnappers, and I say that in a nice way, these people coming out of school, these millennials, as I like to call them, they've taken what took us 10 years to get to. They've shortened that timeline down to 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. And so they will overtake us. And that's fine. That happens to everybody. But I'm not ready for it to happen yet. I need another 10 years before I'm ready for that to happen. So what I would tell somebody that's 40 plus listening to this, that if you don't participate in what I call advanced procedures, implants, sleep apnea, medical billing, all of these other things, you're putting yourself at risk of becoming irrelevant and having your practice passed by those around us. And think back to when you opened your practice, how did you compete and beat those around you? You competed and beat those around you by doing things they weren't doing. Right. And these millennials are coming and they're doing things that you aren't doing, and they're doing them faster.
They take early adapter to another level.
They are.
Yeah.
And so I say from a perspective of species survival.
implantologist survival. No, I agree. You know, when I started out in Western Nebraska, for 120, if you put a pin in there and drew 120 mile around my office, I was the only one. And if you took the one big city where I moved to and moved in another 100 routes.
What's the defined big city?
120,000 people.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah. But it's a regional area, you know, yeah. And today our county has four doctors in it, all four place.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that
your county has four doctors. My street corner has 10.
Sucks to be you.
No, it's great to me.
I know.
I'm just kidding. It keeps me on my toes. Right. Honestly. I thank every day that the next dentist moves in down the street from me, because we literally had a dentist move in down the street and he has a better sign than me. So now I want a better sign. Okay. And, I just it keeps me on my toes. But the difference is I'm willing to stay on my toes.
Right.
And too many dentists, they have a slow erosion of their practice.
The minute you think that you have your practice where you want it to be,
you're screwed.
You're already passed by.
Yeah.
Like you have to, it's all gas, no brakes.
Well, I think we should end it on this, gang. Thank you so much to Dr. Justin Moody. Justin, how do people get in touch with you?
You can find me justinmoodydds.com. You can go to theimplantpathway.com or, all the sites have my email and cell phone on it. Give me a jingle, call me, email me, let me know.
A jingle. That's interesting.
Well, probably a text. I mean, nobody really picks up the phone anymore.
I hate picking. Like when you called me today, I was like, why didn't you just text me? I hate, what's sad is I'm driving. So you obviously, you shouldn't be texting me then, right? But I'm like, why do people call? Because I don't want to talk to anybody. So
I'm going to remember that from now on. I'll probably just always call you now.
Yeah, just to irritate the hell out of me.
I know he's like.
So everybody, thank you so much for listening. And Justin, thank you so much for coming to Raleigh, North Carolina, not to visit me, to visit somebody else.
I appreciate the hospitality, and I shall not come again without. I'm going to take you up. I'll probably make you.
Yeah, stay with me.
I'll probably make you feed me and house me.
I need to get an Uber account as a driver so I can bill you for the drive around town.
See, there
I would
go.
Have to be Uber Black with my car. You know, I'm just saying.
I get it.
Yeah, just because I'm not going to go for Uber X. Those rates aren't good enough. So everybody, you can do me a couple of favors. Number one, if you could share these episodes on social media, we're trying to certainly expand our reach. Number two, if you could leave a review on our iTunes page, that would be great. And number three, if you could make a consideration to see if we would be the right fit at 3D Dentists, for your educational needs and practice growth needs, that would be wonderful. And if we're not the right fit for you, you're still welcome to enjoy the podcast, because it's okay. I can't be the right thing for everybody. So everybody have a wonderful day, and we'll see you back next week.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks so much for listening to T-Bone Speaks with Dr. Tarun Agarwal. Remember to keep striving for excellence, and we'll catch you on the next episode.